This is Deanna Spingola. It is Thursday, and it's April 25th, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Harold Covington. His website is Northwest Front, all one word, northwestfront.org. Harold, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here, Deanna.
And you are going to talk about National Socialism and the fact that probably Americans would readily accept it if they only knew what it was. But of course, we've been brainwashed for so long, several decades, that it was just the most evil thing in existence. And so people really don't investigate anything because they already have preconceived ideas about it.
Right.
Unfortunately. I'd really like to have you tell us what exactly National Socialism is and why Americans would accept it if they only knew what it was.
Okay, well, I'm a little rusty. I haven't done pure NS for a long time. Basically, National Socialism is a worldview for white people. It is based on the beliefs and the writings and the life and work of Adolf Hitler, of course. The National Socialism that is operative in today's world was kind of translated into modern English, if you want to put it like that, by the late Commander George Lincoln Rockwell of the United States. The best, I think, definition of the National Socialist worldview for modern times is contained in something called Cotswold's Manifesto from 1962. There was a meeting of National Socialists in Great Britain, including Commander Rockwell and Colin Jordan, Franz Pfeiffer, and a number of other lights of the movement of the time. And they produced a 7-point statement of the National Socialist worldview. But basically, it's a philosophy, a Weltanschauung, as it's called in German, a worldview for white people. The shortest way I can express it is in a kind of an acronym, which you'll see used in some movement publications, which is ORION, O-R-I-O-N, our race is our nation. That basically is what National Socialism is. It's the concept of the racial nation as opposed to the political nation with land and borders and a specific government, and they can grant citizenship to anybody, including a one-legged Hottentot if they want. That's not a nation. A true nation is a nation of blood and not of geography. I tell people that National Socialism and, of course, our own independence movement here in the Northwest is a movement of blood rather than of faith, but it's also a movement of blood rather than a movement of geography. A racist, a National Socialist, is a pure patriot. Racism is, in fact, the highest form of patriotism, and National Socialism formalizes that. It has a whole historical and philosophical and metaphysical worldview that is based on this concept of race. Race is the primary aspect of human existence and is the most important thing in human affairs. So that is why liberalism, and the Jews, of course, despise it, because basically the power structure of the world today wants all white people dead, and we want white people to live and survive and once again dominate the face of the earth. So you've got two diametrically opposed philosophies there.
Okay. Usually when I think of a country, I think of geographical restrictions and whatnot.
Most people do, yeah.
But nation would indicate people, and that's how it has been scripturally,
Now, a lot of people do have a biblical interpretation of the term nations. Like, for instance, the Aryan Nations up here in Idaho was founded by the late Pastor Butler, and that's the interpretation that he used. He views all of the various Aryan peoples as part of a nation or multiple nations. It has to do with his religious outlook, Christian identity. The Northwest Front right now is not a National Socialist organization as such, although I am, and many of our better people are National Socialists, but we have Christian identity people, we've got pagan people, we've got Second Amendment sovereign citizen types, we've got tax resistors, we've got basically people who are just tired of the government's BS. We're building a broad movement among all of the white people of the continent here, or we're trying to. And so for that reason, we don't use swastikas or crosses or any specific symbol. Our tricolor flag is simply blue, white, and green. But National Socialism is a force within the Northwest independence movement, and it's going to be a force in any kind of white nationalist movement that ever arises and becomes successful. You can't get around it. You can't get around the history of Third Reich and Adolf Hitler's movement. and what the German people did for white civilization. In essence, Germany fought the Alamo of the white race. National socialism is vitally important to the white man, and it was in the past, and it still is.
All righty. So, national socialism, you've given a broad definition, but specifically, how would national socialism benefit America? Now Hitler said that it was not for export. It was something that he did for Germany.
His German version of it was not. Hitler was a German nationalist as well as an Aryan racialist. I know Kale wrote a big long essay about which was which, and points can be made on both sides there. But yeah, the NSDAP was a German and German-oriented movement. Hitler himself really didn't think, I don't think, too much beyond the welfare and the moral and spiritual progress of the German people. He was very much a German, and he thought in German terms, and if you'd asked him what he was, first and foremost, he would have said a German. And so we get that. This is where Commander Rockwell comes in. Commander Rockwell basically was able to take the National Socialist philosophy and apply it in a much wider scale. Most National Socialists today outside Germany are what you might call Rockwellians or Rockwell National Socialists. That would include me, because our worldview is not just based on Mein Kampf, the Old Testament. It's based on the New Testament, White Power by George Lincoln Rockwell. So, yeah. But you got to bear in mind, once again, I was talking a while back about this obsession with the past. The world of the 1930s in Europe is a world that no longer exists in any sense of the word. I mean, Europe itself is now overrun with Muslims and other wogs and Nigerians and whatnot. I mean, the amount of changes that Europe and the world have seen since the end of World War II is just, you know, mind-boggling. And the world that Hitler grew up in, that he worked in, that he struggled in, again, just simply doesn't exist anymore. But his ideas, his principles, his theories, and his passion for his people, these are eternal. Those will survive that particular period. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff about the old NSDAP that was period specific. This is one reason why, even in the early days, back when I was wearing the costume, I understood that it was really kind of futile to dress up like 1930s stormtroopers in Red Wedding in Berlin, because that was not who we were. That was not where we were. I cringe every time I see some kid on the internet calling himself a Standartenfuhrer or whatever like that, or trying to pretend to be a German, because it just, it upsets me and insults me, and I think it's an insult to the men who actually wore the uniform and actually fought and died for the Reich. But again, I can't really fault these people who do this, like the NSM and whatnot. I can't fault them too much, because I used to do it myself. For about the first 8 years or so of my political career, I did it myself. And I understand why people like to do the whole Hollywood Nazi thing and dress up in costumes and pretend to be SA men. It might even work if we had hundreds of thousands of members, but we don't.
Right. And what do you do to actually recruit people?
Well, you mean talk about National Socialism or... Okay.
For the Northwest Front.
Okay, well...
Going off topic.
Internet, of course, but a lot of it's word of mouth. When we have people on the street, and we're actually starting to get some boots on the ground up here in the Northwest now. I complained a lot about this on my own podcast, about how people aren't coming up here, but really, it's starting to happen. It's just not happening fast enough for my taste, but we do have some boots on the ground now. We've actually had some literature distributions in the past couple of months for the first time, actual physical stuff off the internet, and that's important in itself. It doesn't matter even how many people we recruit. The fact is, for a brief moment, we're getting off the internet. And so we also, of course, do non-internet propaganda type stuff, like, for example, manufacturing CDs of my Radio Free Northwest podcasts. We send those out in introductory packets. We have a monthly newsletter called Northwest Observer. And actually, it's a small magazine, 16 pages, and we send that out every month. And we do have printed literature. In fact, I spent this morning rousting some of our people online as far as designing new leaflets go. We do have a line of leaflets, but they weren't really very modernistic. I designed them myself, and there's too much text. And I've been telling people we need leaflets with more graphics in it, so the Beavis and Buttheads out there can see pretty pictures. So we're starting to build up a actual physical literature line that can be hand-distributed by actual people. That's how I want us to recruit, face-to-face, person-to-person. not just doing things online or on a website and having people show up in the form of email addresses and you never know who you're talking to.
Oh, exactly.
I'm sure, I mean, you work internet yourself. I'm sure you've had instances where some guy's popped up on a message board or by email and he sounds real good at first, and then it turns out it's the holy Rabbi Hyman Hebelbaum from Temple Fuckel,
right.
And he's posing as a racist to get a rise out of you, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the ADL or the SPLC bulletin and stuff like that. They like to do that. I don't know why they think it's funny, but they do. It's really ridiculous in a way, the way that the ADL and the SPLC and some of these liberal groups, these Antifa groups, react to us, because right now we're just not that much of a threat. And, you know, they've got to know that, but I guess we're kind of their bread and butter. I've often wondered what people like Mark Potok and Morris Deese would do if it weren't for us. They need us to make their billions of dollars.
Exactly. They need to have anti-Semitism in order to, as you say, as a fundraising kind of a thing.
Well, this is one thing you always have to bear in mind about the way our system works. Without Nazis, there can't be anti-Nazis. And there's big money in anti-Nazism, and there has been for generations. The SPLC being a good case in point. When you're talking about the federal government, you have to bear in mind anti-terrorism is a major multi-billion dollar industry right now in this country. And without terrorists, there can't be anti-terrorists.
Right.
And if there was no terrorism going on,
you couldn't continue the war in the Middle East, and without the Boston bombing, then we wouldn't have Muslims to hate, and then
That strikes me as odd. All of a sudden, these two Chechen kids who apparently are pretty much, well, the younger one especially, who apparently was pretty much completely Americanized, all of a sudden they decide to stick some explosives in a pressure cooker and go blow up the marathon. And then they go running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and they get shot and killed and run down by cars and all this sort of stuff. It just, again, Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said, nothing is ever coincidental in politics.
Right.
And I am always suspicious when events like this occur and they are convenient for the power structure, convenient for Obama. And so we'll have to see what happened there. But this is interesting because if it is an actual so-called Al-Qaeda attack or something, it's the only one since 9/11. I don't count that doctor at Fort Hood. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. He was just a nut, and he snapped, and he couldn't be part of an army anymore that was slaughtering his own people, and so he did some slaughtering on his own. Okay, that I can see as being pretty much as advertised, but and then you get these things that the FBI sets up where they get some poor old Apu from down at the Quickie Mart, and they surround him by about five agents and tell him he's in an Al-Qaeda sleeper cell, and then they talk him into doing a suicide bomb, and they give him a bomb vest full of Play-Doh, and as he walks into the shopping mall or whatever, they arrest him, and they admit in court that they do this, that they set this guy up from the get-go, and the poor bastard still gets 25 years in prison.
Right.
But this isn't that. If this Boston thing is a genuine attack by Muslim extremists or whatever, it's interesting. It's the only one, to my knowledge, since 9/11.
Well, I think that there are too many people who are questioning 9/11, and they have to reiterate themselves that we are under attack, that we have this external force, Al-Qaeda or whatever, that is still a factor in our continuing war. And, you know, the public doesn't really look into any of this stuff. They just believe what they hear on TV and what they see, and they really don't ever ask questions.
I personally question whether Al-Qaeda exists or ever existed. Maybe it did at one stage, but I like this business with, you know, them killing bin Laden. Okay, they go all the way over to Pakistan, allegedly assassinate bin Laden in his living room while he's watching cartoons or whatever, and they take his body away in a helicopter, and then, having taken his body away in a helicopter, rather than bring it all the way back to the aircraft carrier, they dump it in the middle of the ocean.
And then all the people in the helicopter die within a short period of time. Besides that, he died in December of 2001, so.
Yeah, I remember at the time that was circulated in the news media, he had kidney failure or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's kind of hard to hook up a dialysis machine in the middle of a cave in Afghanistan.
Right. And that's why he went to the American hospital and was on dialysis there and was visited by CIA in July of 2001, I think. But anyway, they continue to do these false flag events, and I believe every war has been started by a false flag event, and it's profitable for a certain group of people. So anyway, getting back to the subject at hand, what are some of the things, what are some of the benefits of National Socialism that Americans would probably embrace?
Well, if you will go to our website at www.northwestfront.org, you will find on there a copy of our draft constitution for the Northwest American Republic,
okay.
Which was
created
in October 2006. Now, you will notice that there are certain aspects of that constitution which are very NS. In essence, what we've done is we have created a modernized, updated version of a National Socialist State. If you read my Northwest novels, in several of them where we kind of get into the future where the Republic already exists,
we
mentioned the things like the labor service. For example, a lot of people say, well, Harold, if we get rid of all the Mexican immigrants, who's going to empty our garbage and pick our lettuces and work in my garden? And the answer to that is that young white people will, because as part of their national service, they will do time in the labor service, and they will haul the garbage and dig the ditches and plant the trees or whatever has to be done. So that is a very National Socialist concept.
Right.
I show our people up here Triumph for the Will, and you know that scene where the Arbeitsdienst people are doing the drill with the spades? You know, I tell them, we see that on the screen, I say, remember the labor service I was talking about in my novels? This is it. The Northwest Republic Constitution forbids usury, period, end of story. It will be constitutionally forbidden in the NAR to charge interest on any loan of money. It forbids taxation on homesteads where white people and white families are actually living. The NAR may find it necessary at some point in time to have property taxes of some kind. We can't foresee the future, but it is constitutionally forbidden to tax a homestead where a family is living and white children are being raised. We have some new wrinkles, which I personally think the Fuhrer probably would have approved of. The Northwest American Republic Constitution bans two classes of people who have caused immense trouble in society over the past 2,000 years, lawyers and a professional clergy. It will be forbidden in the NAR for anyone to accept money or anything of value for acting as an advocate or assisting in any way in a legal process, and it will be forbidden for anyone to accept money or anything of value for acting in the capacity of a clergyman. Basically going to make all these parasites do an honest day's work. And if you get rid of those two classes of people, just eliminate them from society, the amount of trouble you will avoid is just amazing. But there's a number of other National Socialist implications or tendencies within the Northwest Constitution. For example, I think one that, the Fuhrer would have approved of is that it is required that anyone holding the office of state president be a military veteran. That didn't come up in National Socialist Germany because the Fuhrer was a military veteran and just about every German man of that generation had served in the trenches. But that's another way to avoid problems is when you have a professional class of politicians who have never actually served in the military. They keep thinking up stupid things for the military to do. So the Northwest Constitution is not a National Socialist document, but it is heavily influenced by the experience of the Third Reich and by National Socialism and by the life and work of Adolf Hitler. There's no question there.
Mm-hmm. You also have in Article 7, you have grounds for revocation or reduction of citizenship shall be conviction of a felony, medically certified mental defect or insanity, proven non-white racial descent to include Jewish ancestry, so you do not allow Jews.
You're talking about classes of citizenship. That's another thing that's in the Northwest Constitution. It is democratic in the sense that there will be elections. But citizenship is divided into three classes. Third-class citizenship is what you get when you complete your national service and you're ready to start life, get married, go to college, etc. You get third-class citizenship with one vote. Once you have reached a certain age, once you have achieved certain goals in life, maybe, say, produced three children or at least two children, whatever the requirements may be, I mean, the Constitution is not specific about these requirements, but whatever they may be, you get your second-class citizenship, which gives you two votes. Now, if you are a sterling member of society, if you are a brain surgeon, a nuclear physicist, if you're a war hero with a couple of Iron Crosses, if you are a senior member of the parliament or you know, serious people, serious leadership cadre material, you get first-class citizenship, which gives you three votes. Basically, this weights the democratic process in favor of the better elements of society. And by the way, that was the way it used to be in the United States Constitution as well, back in 1789 when it was first promulgated. Anyway, when you talk according to Article 7 there, I just thought I should explain to your listeners that that's what they're talking about is citizenship or class of citizenship. And again, I consider this myself to be a very NS idea, so I've interrupted you enough, so go on.
No, that's okay. My guest is my guest. I'm just a facilitator here. Number five, factual proof of the commission of acts of homosexuality.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting into the area here of if I were king, I would do this or that, but I personally consider homosexuality to be a form of mental illness, and in the NAR, it will be treated as such. So this is a horrible accusation to make against any person, especially a man. And my own, again, this is just my own personal opinion here, is that it would also have to be a criminal offense in order to keep it from spreading, keep it in the closet. Look, I mean, let's face it, there have been queers since the beginning of time. There probably will always be queers unless we can find some kind of genetic cure for it. We have to accept this. But at least what we can do is keep it so far back into the closet that it does not corrupt our youth or our culture. For someone, again, in my view, to be charged in a court and convicted of this offense, there needs to be some kind of proof that an actual perverted act took place. Not just, well, I don't like this guy because he looks like a sissy to me, or you talk with a lisp, therefore you must be a queer. You know, there's reasons for people talking with a lisp besides the fact that they're queer. And so in order to be convicted of the offense of homosexuality in the NAR, there would have to be some kind of solid proof of an actual homosexual act. And that's what an article in the Constitution means.
Okay, who wrote this Constitution? Was it a group of people?
The people who made serious contributions to it would be well over a dozen, including some of the order prisoners, including David Lane before he died. So some of that Constitution is David Lane's work. There were, in fact, it took us almost 18 months to put it together. This is not something that I just sat down and tapped out one weekend on my computer. This is actually a group effort that went through several drafts. There was discussion, both on the internet and by mail with the people like the order prisoners, Lane, Scutari, Bruce Pierce, and so forth. So this is an actual interim constitutional document. What's going to happen? However the Northwest Republic comes about, there will be a period where the United States recedes and the forces of independence advance, and we will glom on to X amount of territory, however it might work out, and we're going to need some kind of governing law or some kind of procedure whereby to establish the Republic. Now, I describe this in my novel Freedom Sons as to how, one way anyway, that this might work, but that draft constitution is a key document because that's what we slap into place as a patch, if you will, from the time when the United States collapses and the NAR is formally fully born. Now, what I envision is, as part of the process of the Republic's birth, an actual constitutional convention similar to what our ancestors had in Philadelphia in the 1780s, where we will actually sit down openly, personally, in a meeting hall or the legislative chamber in Olympia or wherever we decide to use, and we will sort out exactly what we want in our Constitution. I describe this process in the first chapter, or the first section, I should say, of my fifth Northwest novel, Freedom Sons, which is about the first 50 years of the Northwest American Republic, the problems that the NAR would meet and have to overcome, so forth and so on. But in the first section, I go over the first year on a kind of a month-by-month basis, and as to how it might work out and various things they'll have to do, setting up a currency, you know, establishing the Constitutional Convention, getting the details of national service sorted out, so forth and so on.
Now, do you have any territory as we speak?
Well, I got my computer. No, look, everything starts as an idea. I'm sorry to say that we're still in the idea phase, but I'm doing what I can as an individual. I've got me, I've got my computer, I have got a small but growing group of very good people up here. The migration process is beginning. It is slow, slow, slow. I mean, if you listen to my Radio Free Northwest every week, me and Andy Donner are on there screaming, get your ass up here, get your ass up here. And we yell and holler at people, but it is happening. There are more of us here than there were this time last year, just not as many as there will be this time next year. My worry is that the process is simply too damn slow. I would urge everybody to go to www.northwestfront.org, look over what we've got, download a few Radio Free Northwests where you can hear me and Andy and Gretchen and some of the other people speaking about this, and think about starting to relocate to the Northwest, because if nothing else...
Why did you choose the Northwest?
Several reasons. First off, the Northwest has a deep psychic and metaphysical and spiritual connection to the racial movement because of Pastor Butler and the Hayden Lake compound. Those are important as a symbol because of the death of Vicki Weaver and her child, or her children, I should say, in Ruby Ridge, because of the struggle of the order and the death of heroic death of Bob Matthews. But the Northwest idea is not mine, by the way. I did not make this up. As I tell people, if you want to get really hit the Wayback Machine, the first idea of a Northwest Republic was in the early 1800s when Aaron Burr and General James Wilkinson wanted to set up their own nation in the Louisiana Purchase. But in the 1940s, there was a move for something called the State of Jefferson in Northern California, because even then, the white people, the normal white people in Northern California, were tired of living under that shower of excrement in Sacramento. Matter of fact, the day they chose for their Declaration of Independence was December the 7th, 1941, and since the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor that day, that kind of upstaged them. But there's still a website on the State of Jefferson. I don't know why they haven't revived that movement and tried to get statehood, probably because Obama and the Democrats would never let them do it because it would be another red state. But anyway, this idea of the Northwest Republic is not mine alone. It's not something that I originated, and I don't claim that. But there's another reason that we need the Northwest as opposed to, say, New England. There have been proposals for other migrations. Some people want to go to New England because it's still the whitest part of the country. We can't really do that because it's simply too close to the liberal power centers. Basically, New England is their little backyard where they like to go to play and have their summer houses.
Mm-hmm.
There is very little chance that they'll ever let Vermont or New Hampshire or Maine go because that's where their summer houses are. But Seattle and Portland and Northwest, it's far away, you know, other than coffee, who gives a damn about Seattle. So, again, you've got to look at the mindset of a future American government who's faced with some kind of difficulty of this nature. But some people say that we should all settle in one little town in the Midwest. Kansas or Illinois or Missouri or Nebraska. And again, these areas, yes, are very white. Iowa's still very white. But then you're talking about enclaves, landlocked stretches of territory that could be surrounded by the enemy. We had a problem enough of that in Rhodesia. We were dependent on our South African lifeline. And when that was messed with, we had problems. Also, a new nation needs size. You can't have a small area like Peoria for a new nation. I mean, look at Gaza. Gaza is so damn small that the Israelis can effectively blockade it. We can't be living in enclaves where the government or the WOGs or whoever, the niggers, could blockade us, surround us, and, you know, choke us off economically. So that means that our homeland, number one, has to be fairly large because we're going to have room to grow into. And secondly, it's going to need a coastline so that we can have access to the sea with deep water ports.
Well, a coastline can always be bombarded also.
Well, it could be, but
I mean, they've done that in Iraq. They did it in Germany.
Again, in my first, I hate to keep referring back to my books, but I deal with all these things in Freedom Sons. For example, in the 12th year of the Northwest Republic's existence, there is a concerted attack by the United States to try and reconquer the Northwest. It's actually the longest section in the book, and I detail how this might happen, why it would happen, so forth and so on. And I did this to answer these people who say, well, Harold, we can never have our own country because the Washington, D.C. would just nuke us. Oh, they'd nuke us, Harold. It'll be so horrible. You know, we are great at finding excuses to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I mean, I deal with all these objections, sort of. Now, again, we don't know how it's actually going to happen, but I'll tell you this, it is going to happen. There's going to be a breakup of the United States. This thing can't hold together forever. It's like the poet W.B. Yeats said, things fall apart, the center cannot hold. There is going to be a Soviet-style bust-up of the United States, and we have to make sure that the white man gets a piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you not think that other races have been exploited by the criminal cabal?
Oh, sure. Other races have been exploited by a lot of people. I am quite willing to admit that blacks have been exploited for their labor by whites, by the old capitalist system, by the plantation system. I personally think that the worst thing we ever did historically in this country occurred in 1619 when those idiots at Jamestown traded two barrels of perfectly good sipping whiskey for 20 niggers. If we had just never brought these people into this country.
We really didn't do that. I mean, there was the criminal cabal was the biggest, they were more active in the slave trading than the white people, as you
Well, by criminal cabal, I assume you mean
I'm talking
Jews.
About the Jews. They ran the ship, they owned the ship, they did all of the trading, they went to Africa, they brought them over, and they've exploited them ever since.
Actually, that's not quite the way it worked. It was the Yankee sailors and the crews that actually took all the risk of sailing to Africa with the ships were financed by Jews. One of the first Jewish communities in what was the colonies at the time. There was one in Newport, Rhode Island. There was one in Charleston,
right.
South Carolina, both of which were centers of a small group of Jews who were, in essence, getting rich off the slave trade, what they called, can't remember now, something kind of triangle, but basically it was composed of molasses, rum, and slaves.
Right.
You got slaves in Africa, took them to the Caribbean and traded them for molasses, took the molasses to New England, or something like that, I can't remember now. It's interesting, though, that's another thing that a lot of people don't realize is the actual slave trade direct with Africa was outlawed by Thomas Jefferson, who was another president who wanted them to be sent back to Africa. But after that, most of the slaves that came into this country were not brought here from ships from Africa and marched down the gangplank in chains or anything like that. They came from the Caribbean and from a lot from Brazil, where they had actually already been slaves for several generations, which, okay, you know, slavery is slavery, but still, we have this image of these ships pulling in and these scarecrow-like blacks being herded off the gangplank in chains and just kidnapped off the beach in West Africa someplace, and it wasn't like that. Yeah, most of the slave trade was Jewish-financed and Jewish-controlled as far as the administration, as far as the profits go. It's just like, say, it was the Yankee skippers and the crews that took all the physical risk. Jews have never been very good sailors, but I can't remember. How did we get on to...
Oh, we were just talking about the triangle trade.
The future of the Northwest American Republic, why we have to have
Right, that you want to have it all be white.
Oh, well, yes. The Constitution prohibits the presence of any non-whites of any kind, and then specifically includes Jews. I have never really grasped this idea that some people in the movement have that Jews are white. They're not, just because they got a pale skin. Just like a Hindu may have a dark skin, just as dark as any Negro, but he's not actually a Negro. He's an Asiatic. When some people, including Negroes, ask me the difference, I'll tell them this guy Apu, you know, his skin's just as dark as yours, but he's not black in the sense you're black. He's an Asiatic. Well, so-and-so's skin may be just as light as mine, but she's not really white. She's an Asiatic.
Mm-hmm.
And that they can understand, but it's not a bad way of putting it. Basically, Jews are Asians. They are an Asian people. They are genetically distinct. That's why their DNA can be detected in DNA tests and so forth, but they are not white people in the sense that we are, because it takes more than a pale skin to make a white person, to make an Aryan.
Mm-hmm. Do you assume that I'm an Aryan?
Beg your pardon?
Are you assuming that I'm an Aryan?
Well, I assume since you're interested in National Socialism, you are.
I'm just teasing with you. I am. My background is English, Irish, German, English, Irish, German, and Danish.
I actually am using Ancestry.com to trace my own ancestry back. I need to get back on that. I've tracked it back to 1822 now, which is where it starts getting dicey because public records start getting really slim about that time, especially in this country. England and the UK and most of Europe, they had a little bit more, but we're getting back into family Bible territory there. That was about the only record you'd have of births and deaths and who did what.
Well, you can also go into the probate records and that kind of thing. But as you say,
wills.
It does get a little bit more difficult. I kind of majored in family history and was very active in it for 20 years.
Yeah. In Britain, you've got parish registers. You don't have so much in this country. But yeah, one of the great ways of tracking historic events, especially in medieval history, which is my forte, has always been wills, because our ancestors were very kept on wills, and they would itemize everything.
Oh, absolutely.
In a will.
And the sales, the estate sales, they wrote down everything.
You can learn a lot about what people left behind when they died. But anyway, like I said, but my ancestry, so far I've found English, German, which I knew, and one Irishman named Kelly, which rather surprised me. I didn't even know I actually had any proper Scotch-Irish, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ulster Protestant. I do know that the Covington that came from Ireland came from Coleraine in County Antrim. I was able to find that when I was over there, but I didn't know he had any Catholic Irish, which I assume from the name Kelly probably this person was, but apparently I've also got an actual Irishman in there somewhere.
Good.
To my surprise, but I mean, no Jews, no niggers, no Lumbee Indians. I was a little bit worried because my family comes from Robeson County, North Carolina, and you got a tribe of half-assed mulatto Indians down there called Lumbees. I was a little bit worried that one of my Robeson County ancestors might have been diddling something red down there back in the middle of the 19th century, but no, none of it showed up. So, yes, Virginia, there is such a thing as racial purity.
Yes, I must say, I guess I'm very genteel, but I would never use the N-word.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is going to go on RBN.
Nope, it's not going to be on RBN.
Okay. All right. Well, there is a reason that I do that. If you don't want me to use it, I won't. I understand why a lot of people...
Well, I probably should have said something before we started the interview.
Fair enough. Well, let me explain why I use the N-word and the F-word, and this actually is important.
Oh, don't use the F-word, because then I'll hang up on you.
No, I don't mean that F-word. I mean the one relating to homosexuals.
Okay. Oh, okay.
No, the thing is, these are forbidden words, and what we're looking at here is Orwellian thought control through the use of language. Now, if you've ever read the novel 1984...
Mm-hmm, I have.
Okay, when people are reading that for the first time, or even rereading it, I recommend that they go right to the appendix about Newspeak. The corruption and the use of language for control of thought. The reason that we are not allowed to say certain words or even print certain words now on the internet in this society is because the powers that be don't want us to think these words. They want to control the parameters of thought by telling us what terms we can use to express certain ideas, even in our own thoughts. And the way you do that is you make people so afraid that they might actually utter a certain word that they actually self-censor themselves. They train themselves not even to think such words for fear that they might actually let one slip and be subject to economic and possibly violent retaliation from some psychopathic monkoid that happens to be standing nearby. By the way, that's one of my favorite circumlocutions, monkoid. But it's an attempt by the system to control our thoughts by making it impossible for us to engage in racial heresy, so to speak, because we don't even have the language to express such thoughts,
mm-hmm.
even in our own minds, because we're so scared that we might actually say it. So that's why I make it a point to, in my own podcasts, deliberately use these forbidden words, because I'm not just trying to, you know, make everybody crude or anything like that. I think this is a practice that we need to get back into in the movement because, frankly, it's words and language like anything else. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm. And I do have friends who are not white. I interview people on my program who are not white. I respect their skills. I respect their education. I respect them as human beings. So we probably differ in that respect.
Well, my view is that right now we are in a war for the white man's racial survival. The world is trying to kill us off. Right now, we're less than 8% of the world's entire population. White women of childbearing age are less than 3% of the entire world's population.
Oh, I had no idea it was that low.
My view is, let's make sure we survive. Let us get a piece of territory for our own in the Northwest. The Northwest Republic is a homeland for all white people. Once our racial survival is assured, once we are sufficiently armed, both with weapons and with knowledge, to make sure that we can survive, once we have the weaponry back in our hands, in our holsters, so to speak, so where we can command respect, then we can talk about respecting other people, races, and so forth and so on. Then a little bit of liberalism in that respect maybe is something we could afford, but so long as we always keep our hands on that pistol at our side. Because this is essentially what's happened. We've given up control of the, we've lost control, I should say.
Yeah, I don't think we ever gave up any control. I think it was seized by the upper echelon.
No, we let them do it. But we've lost control. This is why a lot of people wonder why on my own podcasts I bait the cops and I say provocative things to FBI agents on there. Number one, I know they are listening. I can tell from our stat counter which tracks where certain hits come from. But cops, FBI agents, military, these people are essential to the whole problem. Without these muscle men to keep Obama and the Democrats in power, they wouldn't last a week.
So you think it's just the Democrats?
That's convenient. If you really want to describe the system, you've got to go into, well, the liberal, Zionist, plutocratic, Illuminati, conspirators, blah, 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 blah. And see, most American people just don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, what are you talking about? Oh.
Well, I mean, the Republicans are just as dangerous as...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's another problem I have. I use Obama and the Democrats in everyday conversation. Yeah, because, see, that's what a white man is going to get. A white man on the street or in the Safeway or in the workplace is going to understand that the people who are screwing him over immediately, people who are bringing in Obamacare, causing him to lose his job and lose his hours, mm-hmm. et cetera, those are Obama and the Democrats, mm-hmm. because he sees that on his TV. That he can understand.
Okay.
It's not a total oversimplification to say that it's Obama and the Democrats. They're certainly the tip of the spear, so to speak, but mm-hmm. they are the visible face of the problem. I agree that people, white people especially, do need to be educated as to the entire depth and nature of the problem. Yes, eventually white people need to learn about Illuminati and Zionists and insiders or, mm-hmm. you know, Rothschilds and all this sort of stuff, but you have to understand that to the average man on the street, that just sounds like gibberish. They mm-hmm. don't know what you're talking about because they have been denied the necessary knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So I simplify things a lot by saying, well, it's Obama and the Democrats doing this. And yeah, that makes me sound like I'm a Republican. So I try to throw in a few disclaimers. I mean, you know, I have not forgotten 8 years of George W. Bush. Don't worry. My personal blog was founded back in those days, and it's called Down With Jug Ears, DOWNWITH. JUGEARS, Down With Jug Ears, all one word, at blogspot.com. So, you know, I was no fan of George W. Bush. I mean, the man was a drunken imbecile.
Mm-hmm.
And he's responsible for a lot of the problems today. So, believe me, I do not let the Republicans off the hook.
Okay.
But sometimes I do simplify it by saying Obama and the Democrats, Obama and the ruling party, because especially with Obama being black-ish, we now have a dark face to the problem, which I think is a help.
All righty. Well, it's been very interesting talking with you.
Okay. Send me a URL, and I'd like to, if possible, once this goes on the air, I'd like to download it. But look, I appreciate it.
Well, like I say, it's been very interesting.
And-